You're listening to The Wake Up Reads with Alex Fetzi, the show where I read the best articles, excerpts, and essays in the world of Bitcoin, philosophy, and contrarian thinking. Hey everybody, welcome to Wake Up Read number 9. Last week we read that insane article from 2011, and this week I want to continue the history tradition. There was some pieces that the guy referenced at the end of his essay last week, which I wanted to read through, and I thought I was going to go through all of them, but having read through a couple of them, they're just more like journalism more than anything else. I guess there wasn't that many resources to point to back then as we have today. But notwithstanding, there seems to be one which is cool, which I've just had a glance through. So this is going to be a first read of that for me too. If it sucks, I apologize, but I think it's going to be good. This one's from May 29th in 2011, and it's called On the Potential Adoption and Price Appreciation of Bitcoin in the Long Run. So I don't know who this is by. CS702, actually. So it's someone's private blog. So let's get into this one and we'll do a bit of an analysis at the end. And then, yeah, next week we'll either add some more history or we'll move into a different direction. So let's get to it. On the Potential Adoption and Price Appreciation of Bitcoin in the Long Run by CS702, published May 29th, 2011. In less than a year, the price of Bitcoin has increased from close to zero to nearly $9 as I write this. See below. There is a graph below showing the price going parabolic, prompting the digerati to question, only half jokingly, if Bitcoin prices are in a bubble. See this post by economist Tyler Cohen for a typical example. For the underlying conventional wisdom is that use of Bitcoin is highly unlikely ever to expand beyond a few niche markets. Example, idealistic hackers, online gamblers, and miscellaneous underground characters. I disagree with the conventional wisdom. I'm persuaded that in the long run, think many years or even decades, not just a few years, Bitcoin is likely to gain wide adoption worldwide, and its price is therefore bound to rise far above current levels over time. Before explaining why and how, allow me to take a brief detour to discuss what happened in Zimbabwe on January 29th, 2009, just over 2 years ago. On that date, the BBC reported that this poor nation was forced to abandon its currency, the Zimbabwean dollar, because virtually no one inside or outside the country trusted it anymore. As I write this, Zimbabwe doesn't have an official currency. For the moment, its citizens are free to conduct business in any currency. Hyperinflation led to the Zimbabwean dollar's demise. The facts were almost surreal. At one point in early 2007, in an act of desperation, the government tried to control inflation by declaring it illegal, such that anyone who raised prices or wages would go to jail. In response, prices and wages began rising at a faster rate. By July 2008, the official inflation rate reached over 231 million%. The following month, the government stopped reporting inflation altogether. Not long after that, a newly issued $100 trillion bill couldn't even buy a bus ticket. By then, just about everyone, everywhere, had lost faith in the currency. Words cannot do justice to the chaos and terror inflicted by the demise of a currency. Regular folk lose both their normal repository of purchasing power and their normal means of measuring the worth of everything. For many, degree of need becomes the new yardstick of value. As things spiral out of control, monetary authorities in desperation react by imposing increasingly draconian rules that serve only to accelerate the process. Those who can turn to the US dollar, gold, or anything really that can possibly hold its purchasing power so long as it's not the dying currency. Had it been possible and practical circa 2007, surely many desperate Zimbabweans would have traded at least some of their soon-to-be-obsolete Zimbabwean dollars for a global, digital currency actively traded abroad, especially one that is anonymous and decentralized like Bitcoin. Better Bitcoins of debatable value than Zimbabwean dollars of vanishing value. The same could be said for the people of Yugoslavia in the early 1990s, who at one point saw newly issued banknotes with additional zeros worthless within days, or the Argentines circa 2001, where their government subjected them to the so-called Corralito, the nickname given to a law forbidding withdrawals from many bank accounts, or Mexicans in December 1994, when the peso lost around half of its value against the US dollar in a couple weeks as the Mexican government flirted with default, or Belarusians in the years leading to 2002, or Bolivians in the mid-1980s, or Brazilians in the early 1990s, or the Polish circa 1991, or Russians in August 1998, or Indonesians, South Koreans, and Thais in the summer of 1997. I could go on. The list of countries that have suffered a currency crisis, hyperinflation, or the outright demise of an official currency over the past few decades is long. The number of people alive who have suffered through such currency disasters is therefore enormous. Around a billion live just in the countries mentioned above. And below there's an image of the Argentines protesting the Caudalito of 2001 to 2002. The numbers grow considerably larger if we include all the people who have suffered through other types of man-made disasters, whether economic crises, political turmoil, religious and ethnic strife, revolution, or war. As a reference point, Wikipedia lists over 100 wars occurring worldwide since 1990. The expanded figure is in the order of billions of people, a sobering fact for anyone who has experienced only the relative stability of the developed world in his or her lifetime. In late 2008, people in the developed world got only but a brief hint of how it might feel to suffer through such full-on disasters. When people are forced by fate to face the extreme uncertainty of such circumstances, they often seek to diversify away from local currencies, facing existential risk, and turn to the US dollar, gold, or anything else really that can possibly hold its purchasing power under all but the most dire of scenarios. Unsurprisingly, the majority of all US dollar bills in circulation, the cumbersome ones made of actual paper, are held outside the US, for even when the viability of banks has been rendered in doubt, no bank deposit can ever substitute for cash. Had it been possible and practical, in the sense explained further above, when things looked hopeless, surely many among those billions of people would have traded at least some of their holdings of local currency for a global, decentralized, anonymous, digital currency actively traded abroad, especially one with the properties of Bitcoin. The properties of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is not just global, decentralized, and optionally anonymous. It is also the most versatile form of cash introduced to date. For a Bitcoin, it's just a long sequence of digits with certain cryptographic attributes. So anything one can do with numbers, one can just as easily do with it. In practical terms, this means Bitcoin is easier to secure, transport, hide, and back up than all prior forms of cash ever used by civilization. In fact, no prior form of cash ever in use, whether made of paper, metal, or other material, could be backed up like Bitcoin. As an arbitrary example of Bitcoin's extreme versatility, imagine, say, a US government agent in hostile territory who needs to send cash to a second agent located a few miles away, but there is no safe transportation, no phone line, no internet connection, and no third party who could serve as an intermediary. With Bitcoin, it can be done. The first agent can enter a transaction or even encrypt a Bitcoin wallet on any computing device and send the resulting sequence of encrypted digits via almost any means available, radio broadcast, lighthouse beam, drum beats, even smoke signals. Transmitting many thousands of digits via smoke signals might take a long time, but it can be done. Anyone intercepting the message would obtain just the encrypted sequence, whether embodied as radio signals, light beams, sound waves, or columns of smoke. Actual cash would be securely traveling from one agent to the other. Being numbers, Bitcoin can be sent over almost any medium. Having been only recently introduced, at the moment, Bitcoin requires a minimum of technical expertise to use, specifically installing a software application on a personal computer. However, judging by the growing number of new tools, services, and infrastructure being developed worldwide for and around Bitcoin, I would expect it to become much easier to use in the not-too-distant future. Easy enough, say, for anyone who can use a mobile phone. Bitcoins are much harder to forge than paper currencies, because the sequence of digits that makes up each Bitcoin is practically impossible to replicate without access to the original. In fact, it's easier for a criminal to make counterfeit US dollar bills that can fool people on the streets than to make counterfeit Bitcoins that can fool Bitcoin's peer-to-peer network. The former can be accomplished with paper, ink, and printing equipment. The latter would require breaking state-of-the-art cryptographic hashing, currently SHA-256, and signing, currently EC, DCA, and DSA. Bitcoins are scarce by design. their number will grow to a maximum of 21 million by 2030. But being numbers, they can be subdivided into arbitrarily smaller parts. At the moment, subdivision is limited for practical purposes to 8 decimal points of precision, but this limit is not inherent to the design. The subdivided parts of a Bitcoin, being numbers too, have the exact same properties as the whole. Thus, should the need ever arise, the world could just as easily deal in millibitcoin, a thousandth of a Bitcoin, micro Bitcoin, a millionth, etc., as in Bitcoin. Finally, as the first ever form of crypto cash to gain brand recognition and market momentum, Bitcoin is now benefiting from growing network effects. Bitcoin, in short, has gone viral, something that would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to replicate by any would-be competitors. As a side note, I can't help but smirk whenever some other expert on the subject of cryptography finds out about Bitcoin and almost immediately proposes some other design as a superior, failing to realize that at this point, it doesn't matter. Intrinsic value versus price of Bitcoins. Adam Smith, the father of modern economics, distinguished between value in use and value in exchange. In his own words, quote, "The word value, it is to be observed, has two different meanings, and sometimes expresses the utility of some particular object, and sometimes the power of purchasing other goods which the possession of that object conveys. The one may be called value in use, the other value in exchange. The things which have the greatest value in use have frequently little or no value in exchange. On the contrary, those which have the greatest value in exchange have frequently little or no value in use. Nothing is more useful than water, but it will purchase scarce anything. Scarce anything can be had in exchange for it. A diamond, on the contrary, has scarce any use value, but a very great quantity of other goods may frequently be had in exchange for it." End quote. Bitcoins, being just numbers, have zero use value. Actually, their use value is slightly negative because they have tiny carrying costs. Every moment one holds a Bitcoin, one is paying for it with the consumption of resources such as storage space or electricity. But we can ignore these tiny carrying costs. Thus, Bitcoins can have only value in exchange. To the owner of a Bitcoin, its value depends solely on what other people are willing to trade for it. Should no one else want to trade anything for it? For example, if Bitcoin's network were ever to be shown to be susceptible to concerted attack, the Bitcoin's exchange value would revert to its use value, i.e. zero. For the sake of familiarity, let's use the more common terms intrinsic value and price, respectively, to refer to the concepts of value in use and value in exchange. We can restate the above as follows. Bitcoin has no intrinsic value, but may trade at any price as set by supply and demand. In this regard, Bitcoin is like all other currencies in circulation today. Trial by fire. Given that over the past few decades, billions of people have suffered financial, economic, and political crises and collapses, religious and ethnic conflicts, revolutions, and wars, should we not expect billions to live through more such man-made disasters in the coming decades? The optimist in me hopes there are no more such horrible disasters anywhere in the world ever again. The realist in me has no choice but to expect them to occur from time to time. In fact, they're always occurring. As I write this, European countries like Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain are staring down at full-blown economic and political crises, and the Middle East is in the midst of a sudden, unexpected wave of political transformation, the ultimate consequences of which are uncertain. The anonymity, decentralized nature, and extreme versatility of Bitcoin make it an ideal form of cash for coping with the extreme uncertainty inherent to such unstable situations. Financial crises, collapsed economies, topple governments, military conflicts, Bitcoin can survive them all. As Bitcoin becomes easier to buy and sell and use by regular folk, its use in extreme, difficult circumstances therefore seems inevitable to me. When people are desperate, they tend to be more willing to try new things. So long as Bitcoin works as intended, people around the planet are bound to turn to it as the currency and store of value of last resort. Trial by fire. That is how Bitcoin will prove it has metal. If Bitcoin passes the harsh tests of crisis again and again, it will slowly gain credibility in the public's mind, both as a medium of exchange and a store of value. Over a period of many years or even decades, as the world gradually learns via trial and error how to use Bitcoin, becomes familiar with its properties, and ultimately comes to trust it, nothing can prevent it from gaining as much credibility as, say, gold. The world's existing legal and regulatory regimes may not welcome Bitcoin at first. Few governments are likely to take kindly to the emergence of a decentralized, anonymous global currency beyond their control. Sooner or later, however, governments will adapt to the changing circumstances, as they always do. I would expect governmental acceptance of Bitcoin to occur initially in less developed countries, as many of them are already used to having their fortunes tied to a global currency beyond their control, for example, the US dollar. If I'm right, in the long run, as man-made crises of all kinds erupt all over the planet from time to time, global adoption of Bitcoin should gradually expand from niche markets to the broader population. Ultimately, global adoption for Bitcoin should be enormous. Quantifying potential adoption for Bitcoin in the long run. The primary goal of the analysis that follows is to get the orders of magnitude roughly right, not to come up with precise figures that would surely be wrong. A secondary goal is to provide you, the reader, with a simple framework you can use to quantify Bitcoin adoption and potential price based on your own views about its future. Global adoption for Bitcoin over time should come in two forms: adoption of it as a medium of exchange and as a store of value. Let's consider the former first. We can guesstimate maximum possible global adoption for Bitcoin as medium of exchange with a mental experiment. Imagine if all countries worldwide decided, en masse, to replace all currencies in circulation with Bitcoins, all at the same time in a coordinated fashion. More or less in the way the initial members of the European Monetary Union replaced their respective national currencies, the German marks, the French francs, the Italian lira, etc., with the euro on December 31st, 1998. Obviously, such a wholesale replacement of all currencies for Bitcoins will never happen, but please entertain the notion for a moment. For such a replacement to be completed, all cash across all currencies carried around in wallets, locked in cash registers, packed in briefcases, stored under mattresses, secured inside safes, etc., the total amount of pocket change, as it were, the world needs to function every day, would have to be exchanged for Bitcoins. The remaining components of the world's monetary base, example bank deposits, money funds, etc., which by and large exist only in the form of accounting entries, would continue to exist as such, but denominated in Bitcoins. This is just like what was done to create the euro. Immediately after this wholesale replacement of all currencies, Bitcoin would be, to a close approximation, the only medium of exchange on the planet. Since everyone would be using Bitcoin, adoption as a medium of exchange would have reached its maximum possible. It follows that total cash in circulation across all currencies, or more precisely, the goods and services that could be purchased with it, constitutes a good guesstimate of maximum possible global adoption for Bitcoins as a medium of exchange at any point in time. So, how much cash in circulation is there worldwide? According to the US Federal Reserve, as of May 2, 2011, the aggregate value of all US dollars in circulation is approximately $955 billion. According to the ECB, at the end of March 2011, the aggregate value of all euros in circulation is approximately 846 billion euros. 824 billion in large denominations and 22 billion in small denominations, equivalent to approximately 1.2 trillion US dollars at the current exchange rates. The aggregate market value of all US dollar and euro bills in circulation worldwide at current exchange rates is therefore around 2.2 trillion. The US dollar and euro economies in nominal terms represent approximately half of the world's annual economic output. So all else being equal, we can assume that the aggregate market value of all other currencies in circulation used by all other economies in the world at current exchange rates is likely around 2.2 trillion also. Therefore, cash in circulation today across all currencies totals around 4.4 trillion. You can think of this rough figure as the amount of pocket change the world needs, in total, to function every day. The world population currently estimated at nearly 6.8 billion. This works out to roughly 650 for every person alive. This per person average seems reasonable to me, given that it includes not just all cash held by individuals, but also that's held across all organizations. Should a sufficiently large group of people ever adopt Bitcoin as their main medium of exchange, all else being the same, they would need around $650 worth of Bitcoins in pocket change circulating for every person in the group. Potential adoption of Bitcoins as a store of value is much harder to quantify because so many types of assets, both financial assets like cash itself, bank deposits, government bonds, and shares of common stock, as well as real estate assets like property, artwork, jewelry, and precious metals, are regularly used for this purpose. I know of no way to estimate in any remotely accurate way which of all those assets, nor to what extent, could ever be displaced by Bitcoin as a store of value. Complicating matters, the figures involved are barely fathomable. According to McKinsey & Co., just the world's financial assets totaled approximately $178 trillion at year-end 2008, or roughly 40 times the amount of cash in circulation worldwide. Perhaps the most comparable asset to Bitcoin as a store of value might be gold. Throughout history, it has been used for that purpose. Its physical stock is fixed to the amount that ultimately can be mined from the ground. Its ownership can be anonymous. There is no single central authority that controls it. It pays no interest. And by and large, no one uses it as a currency today. So let's limit ourselves to estimating what the adoption of Bitcoin as a store of value might be, should the world ever adopt it for that purpose, to the same extent as gold today. This would be in addition to any adoption of Bitcoins as a medium exchange. According to the World Gold Council, 165,000 tons of gold have been mined since the beginning of civilization, all of which is still with us. At $1,525 per troy ounce, all this gold is currently worth around $8.1 trillion. The World Gold Council estimates that over a third is held by investors and central banks for investment, worth approximately $2.7 trillion, or around $400 for every person alive. This roughly is how much gold the world owns as a store of value. Should a sufficiently large group of people ever adopt Bitcoin as a store of value to the same extent as gold today, the group would need around $400 worth of Bitcoins for every person in it. Therefore, the world would need an average of around $650 worth of Bitcoins for every person who adopts it as his or her currency, plus $400 worth of Bitcoins for every person who adopts it as a store of value to the same extent gold is used today. Don't forget that these two figures are, first of all, rough estimates, and second, worldwide averages. So they will vary widely from person to person. Also, please note that both figures are in current US dollars. All else remaining the same, they will grow with US dollar inflation over time. Bitcoin price will be a function of adoption. Using the per-person averages calculated above, we can guesstimate what Bitcoin's price might be under any adoption scenario. For example, say that over the next 10 years, 100 million individuals worldwide adopt Bitcoin as a store of value, to the same extent gold is used today. But no one adopts it as a currency, and annual US dollar inflation is 3% over the entire period. By 2021, each of these individuals would need to own an average of $400 times 1.03 to the 10th, or around $540 worth of Bitcoins. Multiplying this figure by 100 million people gives us around 54 billion worth of Bitcoins needed by all these individuals as a group in 2021. Dividing this last figure by the number of Bitcoins then outstanding, around 18.3 million, we obtain $2,950 per Bitcoin, or $2.95 per millibitcoin, a thousandth of a Bitcoin. So, in the order of a few US dollars per millibitcoin. For a more optimistic, less unrealistic scenario, say that over the next 20 years, a billion people adopt Bitcoin as a currency and store of value to the same extent gold is used today, and annual US dollar inflation over the period is 3%. By 2031, each of these individuals would need to own an average of 650 plus 400 multiplied by 1.03 to the power of 20, or around $1,900 worth of Bitcoins. Multiplying this figure by a billion gives us around 1.9 trillion worth of Bitcoins needed by the whole group in 2031. Dividing this last figure by the number of Bitcoins then outstanding, 21 million, we obtain a price of over 90,000 per Bitcoin, or 0.09 cents per micro Bitcoin, i.e. a millionth of a Bitcoin. So in the order of a handful of US cents per micro Bitcoin. One thing becomes evident to me from this exercise. Should Bitcoin ever gain wide adoption, its price should rise by at least several orders of magnitude. The forecast, of course, will vary widely depending on the assumptions used, so I would encourage you to play with them and reach your own conclusion. Addendum. Using reverse logic, we can guesstimate Bitcoin adoption at any time. For instance, as I write this, there are just over 6.3 million Bitcoins in existence, each trading for around $9, for a total Bitcoin market cap of around 57 million. The early adopters who own these Bitcoins, by and large, seem to be using Bitcoin as a store of value, not as a currency. And they likely own more than the global average per person of $400 worth of Bitcoins we estimated above, because they're more technologically sophisticated and therefore wealthier than the average person on the planet. Nominal economic output per capita in developed countries is roughly 3 to 5 times higher than for the world as a whole. So let's say Bitcoin's early adopters own, on average, 4 times the $400 or $1,600 worth of Bitcoins. Dividing the current market cap of 57 million by this last figure, we obtain a guesstimate of current Bitcoin adoption around 36,000 or so, in the order of a few dozen thousand individuals worldwide. So there we have it. Another piece of incredible Bitcoin history from 2011. Just a quick note on that addendum. Right at the end, that last paragraph that I read kind of went over my head as I first read it. So in case it did for you as well, I reread it in my mind. And basically what he was making a kind of like a reverse calculation of what the current adoption actually looks like. And he used that estimate of, you know, how much money people have, et cetera, to basically come up with 36,000 people worldwide currently holding Bitcoin, and primarily for the store of value function. And this is where, I mean, it's quite interesting. So, you know, obviously these days we're so much more bullish on Bitcoin, and our, you know, our estimates and everything are in the millions and fucking billions and everything. And, you know, this whole meme of everything there is divided by 21 million, which, I mean, it builds on top of this stuff. Like, he was being very conservative in his estimates. And particularly, I mean, you know, he made an estimate of 3% inflation, which inflation has been more like somewhere around the 15% mark. So when you actually slot that kind of number into his equations, you know, maybe his estimates aren't that far off actually in terms of where we are. In fact, I might even do a spreadsheet on that just to see where that actually lands, because that figure might actually be a hell of a lot closer to where we should be, because his low estimate was the $3,000 per Bitcoin by 2021, which, okay, in 2021 it didn't hit $3,000. It was a bit higher, but fuck, he wasn't far off, man. Like, this was just a reminder. Bitcoin was $9 when we wrote this. $9. So, you know, it's incredible to see. So anyway, I wanted to pull in a couple of threads that he discussed. So one of his quotes early on is, "I just disagree with the conventional wisdom. I am persuaded that in the long run, think many years or even decades, that Bitcoin is likely to gain wide adoption worldwide, and its price is therefore bound to rise far above current levels." I mean, first of all, fucking kudos. He was 1,000,000% accurate in this. And particularly, I like his, you know, the prior article, I think, was a little bit, you know, too focused on the exponential nature of Bitcoin, and it was, you know, literally saying that everyone was going to be using it in 3 years. He took a more prudent view in this and talking about kind of decades and a broader time frame, which I think was incredibly smart. So this, I was very happy to see that. And then when he started, you know, using the hyperinflationary scenarios, like just the sheer number of them in the 2 decades preceding Bitcoin's emergence is, and you know, we all know about this. We all know about Zimbabwe and this and that, but just like the way he listed them there just made me realize once again, I think, I mean, at least in the last decade and a bit since 2008, since Bitcoin's emergence, like we haven't seen that as much. Like, you know, we've kind of had this, you know, post GFC major bull run and all sorts of other fucking shenanigans happening, where if there were any major hyperinflations in that period, we haven't really seen them. I mean, we've had Venezuela, that's kind of like the big standout. And I'm sure there's been some other small countries, you know, whether in Africa, the Middle East or whatever, but the sheer number there, like Russia, Argentina, Yugoslavia, et cetera, was interesting to see. And he makes the point, which I like, is that, I mean, it's effectively the point that I made a year and a half or 2 years ago, whenever it was, when I wrote Bitcoin and Lockdowns. In that article, I made the case that Bitcoin's adoption will be a function of necessity. And he goes into it in his section, you know, Trial by Fire, which was probably my favorite section of the whole thing. And, you know, that's basically like a 10-year-old rendition of that article, you know, where Bitcoin's adoption is a function of necessity. That's the ultimate factor. We don't win by fucking ramming Bitcoin down people's throats. You know, all the memes and everything help, and, you know, talking to people and family and this and that, like, obviously all of that helps. But we win more so by virtue of the fact that the clown show will fuck everyone over and erode their purchasing power, drive them crazy through inflation, and kind of what he makes the case for in the beginning of the article, which is all of these catastrophes that are happening that are man-made, they are a function of bureaucratic incompetence. They are what's going to drive people to Bitcoin. So what do we need to worry about? We just need to hang out over here, stay strong, hodl the fucking line, and TikTok next block. That's it. People are going to come to us. We have the superior money. And he makes a very early case for this, which is beautiful. The next thing that I wanted to pull on is Bitcoin is information. And he uses that example of the agent. You know, the first agent can enter a transaction or even encrypt a Bitcoin wallet on any computing device and send the resulting sequence of encrypted digits via almost any means available: radio broadcast, lighthouse beam, drum beats, and even smoke signals. So this part reminds me both of GG and of NVK. Shout out to both of you guys. But I mean, he fucking nailed the Bitcoin is information piece again in 2011. And he's absolutely fucking accurate. It also reminds me of, you know, Antonopoulos. I think he talks a lot about, back in the day when it was cool, talked a lot about Bitcoin and the fact that, you know, look, it's information. You can encode the shit in emojis if you want to. Then go and ban fucking emojis. Like, this is one of the, like, Bitcoin transformed money into information. And you can't delete information. I'm sorry, but that's just not how physics in the physical world works. And he beautifully and eloquently explained that in this piece, which, once again, super, 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 super impressive back then. He did also, you know, make a note about, like, subdivision, and, you know, that's a more complex topic, as we discussed with John Carvalho. But I mean, his primary point still stands, is like, we've got a fixed amount, and if you're counting 21 million Bitcoin, you know, where the reality is there's 2.1 quadrillion sats, really. But if you're counting the 21 million Bitcoin, then yes, it's divisible to 8 decimal places. And people generally think in the form of 21 million Bitcoin. Now, my guess, and you've probably heard me in the past talk about this, is that we will, this decade, move away from measuring the Bitcoin price. Like, no motherfucker is going to measure the Bitcoin price. They're going to be measuring the price of sats, or, you know, here, like, we've got this whole thing about bits and millibits and all this other fucking bullshit. Like, the idea of sats wasn't around at the time of this article, but that's what we're going to measure. And, you know, as I've said on previous podcasts, on mine and on others, is that the bull run, the real fucking bull run, starts when we reach sat cent parity. So when one sat equals 1 cent, and then when one sat goes from 1 cent to 2 cents to 3 cents to 4 cents, that is a fucking real bull run. And that's going to seem like, yeah, so what, 1 cent to 2 cents, that's not a big move. But Bitcoin will have moved from 1 million to 2 million to 3 million to 4 million. And that kind of shit will happen overnight. That's when the real bull run starts. So anyway, I digress. The other part that I liked was his jab at early incarnations of Bitcoin derangement syndrome. You know, where he talks about these, you know, I can't help but laugh that I mentioned Bitcoin to, you know, these nerds and cryptographers, and they're like, oh, you know, I would do it this way. And it's like those same morons are still out there. Like, you know, whether it's the Iman Gunseeras who are fucking running around doing Algorand or whatever other bullshit, you know, salty that they ignored Bitcoin since its inception. You know, even Charm, I think, fucking went off the deep end, and that clown from Chia who created BitTorrent, like, fuck, it's everywhere. And it's just funny that he jabs him back then. I like this idea, the framing, the mental model that he used about the value in use versus value in exchange. And I mean, this is something Peter Schiff should go fucking read. I don't think that he's, you know, really making a case for the intrinsic nature of value, because he's not stupid enough, or at least he's not using it in that framing. Like, I think he understands that there is no intrinsic value, but he's just using it as a way to understand those differences, is that, like, you know, Bitcoin's, like, inherent value, and fuck, here we go. Now I'm sounding like an intrinsic value person, but you know, you can't eat the shit. You can't like wipe your ass with it or anything like that. I mean, maybe you could with an open dime, but that's not actually Bitcoin. The fact is, it's not useful in and of itself outside of the context as a scorecard or as money. So that's, I think it's a really good mental model and something worth, I mean, you should be sharing this fucking article with anyone that you think needs to read it, but it's a great mental model. Then, you know, the piece where he said that small nations are going to be first to adopt this was fucking spot on. Like, here we are literally 10 years almost to the date. In fact, Jesus, this was written May 29th. Yeah, so like literally 10 years to the day almost, like a week or two before it was announced that Salvador was going to be making Bitcoin legal tender. Like, fucking nailed that. Very impressive. The last couple of things, medium exchange analysis and its separation from store of value was like quite interesting. You know, people to this day separate the two. And you've heard me in the past probably also talk about the fact that money can't be separate. You can't separate store of value from medium exchange. Like a money must have both. But we use different monetary-like goods in the economy for medium exchange or store of value or a blend of both. And he really did a good job separating those and, you know, also like quoting that full number of 178 trillion for like all store of value assets was totally on the right track. Like, this is the stuff we're talking about now. And this is part of our broad thesis that Bitcoin is going to demonetize all of these other assets that are being used as store value assets because Bitcoin is fundamentally superior to all of them. So he was super ahead of his time. And then his honing in on gold was like a fucking home run. I mean, I wonder if Saylor's read this because that's Saylor's whole point is like, let's kill gold first. Let's beat that. Then let's move on to bonds or stocks or whatever. And let's just climb the ladder. And then we'll get to knocking over the US dollar and the US government later. Like there's a strategic order that we should be going in. Anyway, while he was in that section, the funny thing that was, it was just funny reading that how, like, you know, he's talking billions and how big those numbers seemed back then. It was like, oh, you know, there's $1 trillion floating around. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure we're an entire order of magnitude, if not two, greater than what we, maybe not two orders of magnitude, but man, trillions are the fucking throw around numbers these days, no longer billions. It's fucking crazy how much the world's changed since then, and how much, you know, just numbers. I just, you know, randomly use the word inflation, but like the kind of numbers we're using have magnified to such a degree it's not even funny. And this is where, you know, his assumption of that 3% inflation was wrong. I mean, and any sane person would have, you know, made that assumption because that's a good assumption to make. Like, you know, it's a percent over what the central banks want to keep it at. It's just that they have managed to fuck everything up. And here we are a decade since this article and things are a hell of a lot fucking worse than I think what any of us anticipated. And then like the last part that I want to say that was kind of funny was the price of gold in May 2011, $1,525 an ounce. And here we are 11 years later and it's barely $200, $250, maybe $300 more than that. So it's not even beat fucking inflation. So that is hands down pathetic and probably a good sign that Bitcoin chewed up a big chunk of maybe the market capitalization and the store of value component that gold may have itself sucked up in the last decade. So that actually is it's funny, but it's also an interesting point to look back on now, reading this in 2022. You know, like, this demonetization of gold has fundamentally begun. Like, Bitcoin has sucked away any relative increase. In fact, yeah, once again, since Bitcoin's inception, I mean, maybe in 2008, 2009, I think, you know, at the time of his writing, you know, gold was definitely in a bull run sort of phase. So maybe it's beat inflation in that period. But, you know, comparatively speaking, that there's like, you know, Bitcoin's up millions of percent, whereas gold might be up 100 or 150% in that time since the date of Bitcoin's inception. So, you know, that to Saylor's point is we win that war first. That's like the low-hanging fruit. Let's establish that. If you know, Bitcoin gets to the $10 trillion mark, that's we're doing very, very, very well. And I mean, to see how much, whether it's inflation or money supply and all of these sort of things have accelerated in the last 10 years, and knowing where we are today and the rate of monetary expansion and the rate of clown world stupidity that is occurring right now, fuck me. Like the 2031 estimate that he's made is way lower. Like if his 2021 estimate was an order of magnitude off, which it roughly was, his 2031 estimate might be two or three orders of magnitude off, which means we could be looking at, I mean, at the very least, $1 million Bitcoin, if not more likely, $10 million Bitcoin by 2031. So that's interesting. But anyway, pricing and fucking all of that shit, not important, as you know, to me. It's just fascinating to see this written in 2011, once again, like the other piece. And I mean, I love Bitcoin history like this. I haven't honestly come across these two pieces until, like, obviously the first one I came across, I think that was in one of the Telegram groups that I was in. Someone pasted it in there. And fuck, I can't remember who off the top of my head now. But yeah, I'm so glad I read that. I'm so glad I found this. And I hope you guys listening to this have found some value in it. And the link to the article is in the show notes. This is a beautiful one to pass around to people who have either been recent naysayers or long-term naysayers and say, hey, fuck, the thesis has not changed. Here we are, it's 2022, and we are still saying the same thing. And objectively speaking, we have been 100 motherfucking percent right. So thank you again for listening. I will see you on the next episode. And by the time you're listening to this, Uncommunist should be just about to launch. As I asked on the last episode, if you can do me one favor, please jump on there, buy it, and leave a verified review. The more verified reviews we get, the higher we will be rated, the more likely that we land on a bestseller list, and the more likely more people actually read that book and hopefully cleanse themselves of the disease that is communism. So that's uncommunist.com. The Bitcoin Times is also coming out, so you can support us there. We'll be launching it at BitBlock Boom with myself, Jimmy Song, Kaysen, Parker Lewis, and Jeff Booth. The only person we're missing is Mr. Giacomo Zucco, but hopefully I'll be in Riga to hang out with him there, and I'll bring a couple copies of the Bitcoin Times there. So enough babbling from me. Thank you once again. Hope you enjoyed this, and I'll see you on the next episode of Wake Up Reads.
Thank you for listening to the Wake Up Podcast. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. I'll try and read the new tweet and send you a shout out. And remember to grab a copy of the Uncommunist Manifesto and join us in defeating the plague that is consuming our world.